All right, welcome everybody to Discussions with the Devil. I'm That Salty Devil.
I'm Mouthy.
And we're your hosts, along with Apeshit.
Oh, yes. Calling Ape. Apeshit, you know, it all works.
Oh, Lord. I don't think you'll ever be used to that nickname.
Yeah, I it'll grow on me eventually.
You reacted quicker than I thought you were going to, though.
Cause you're, yeah.
It was like, I was expecting like at least a 10-second delay, and you definitely beat that. You were just like, oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah. It's only three of us. Oh, that's got to be me.
All right. So topic of conversation today is going to be philanthropy. Reason being, and this is more kind of a personal thing, and Apeshit understands this as well. This month is, right now as we're recording, it is April 26th. Yesterday we attempted to record on our normal day, and it just, you know, things weren't lining up and we couldn't really make it happen. Yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of the very first fundraiser that I ever organized, and at least fundraiser on a large scale. And it kind of made me, you know, start to reflect back, because April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. And the fundraiser that I organized was called Footprints for the Future. Footprints of the Future. Wow, it's been that long since I had to think about that. And I organized it with, you know, a couple of close friends. Apeshit was included in the sense that he was there on the day of the event, doing caricature drawings of people. And it was a very humbling and eye-opening experience into the world of philanthropy for me, as far as me being somebody with medical special needs. I kind of have always been tossed into, you know, one cause or another when it comes to raising money for this or raising money for that, or being the poster child for this, or, you know, all that kind of, you know, happy horse shit. So, but I think for me, it got to be something a little bit more personal when we started, pardon me, I had to stretch. When we started this whole project, where I grew up, somebody that I went to school with, shortly after we had been out of school, ended up getting arrested, charged, and convicted of child abuse of an infant. And it really kind of hit me. Like, I knew this kid. Like, I never really liked him because he was always a troublemaker. So we always knew that he would end up kind of in jail for something. But I don't think any of us ever imagined that he would end up in jail for what he ended up in jail for. So around the time that we heard about him being arrested, there was this movie on Lifetime called For the Love of a Child. And my mom and I at the time sat down and watched it. And it was about the creation of a national child abuse awareness organization called Child Help. And I sat there watching it and I couldn't take my eyes off it. And it basically just floored me. Like, I understood that child abuse was a very serious thing, and I understood that, unfortunately, it was very common. But to see why they why they created this organization. Because when we did the fundraiser, and Apeshit, I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but when we did the initial fundraiser, it was actually on the 50th anniversary of the organization of Child Help. Because what we were doing, we were trying to raise awareness of the epidemic of child abuse, but we were also trying to raise money for this organization. And it just, it blew me away, everything I was seeing in this movie. And I'm pretty sure that they've probably run the movie on Lifetime this month, but I haven't seen it in a while. But I was going through some pictures probably about 10 days ago. And the reason that that's significant was on April 17th, 2011, was the second child abuse awareness fundraiser that I did. And the pictures that I came across were of the performers that we had. And there was a lead singer and a guitarist from one of the local bands where I grew up, and the local band was actually supposed to perform, but they couldn't. They ended up not being able to because of scheduling conflicts. But the lead singer and the lead guitarist ended up coming together and doing an acoustic duo for this specific event, and they actually ended up becoming very popular after that. So I found pictures of that particular event, the 2011 event. And it kind of just brought back all the memories of organizing the first one in 2009. And what I wanted to kind of talk to you guys about today and see kind of your thoughts as to what your experiences have been, if you've ever been involved in any fundraisers or philanthropic endeavors, or if you know anybody who has, and if you have any personal stories or stories that you've heard.
Well, personally, I've never really been able to do a whole lot. There's always been more I've wanted to do. But unfortunately it wasn't always in the cards to which I was dealt. But when, throughout my time serving in the military, they gave us the option to be able to donate to charities, you know, of your choice. It would be just something to come out of your paycheck each month or whatever, you could do a one-time thing. And every year I'd always donate to, you know, to the Feed the Children Foundation. Because, I mean, I'm not always the nicest of people, but I find that, you know, I had a soft spot for children, especially my own.
Yeah.
So,
you do refer to yourself as the salty devil. So, I mean, it's kind of understandable that you say you're not the nicest person, although I kind of would argue that because, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you've been nice to us, so.
Yeah, you know, but that's also because I generally give everybody a chance before I kind of, before it comes out.
Yeah.
So, but, on another subject, something that I've actually been trying to do for a while, kind of off and on, and hopefully with the way that, you know, my server and everything goes, and you and I have kind of talked about it too, is I want to get to a point where not only can I help, you know, homeless people have a shelter and everything, but I also want to be able to have a company that would offer to train them, get them skills, get them into a, you know, a good decent job. 'Cause you know, a lot of times, people are just dealt a bad hand.
Yeah.
And they don't know, and they also don't know what resources they have available to them. So like, if I can get to a point where I can start doing that, I'd like to enact that. I started a group before I even thought about, you know, Rabid Potato Studios or anything like that. It was something that I wanted to do. Have either of you seen Bruce Almighty or not Bruce Almighty, Evan Almighty?
I absolutely have. I love that movie.
The acronym ARC, Acts of Random Kindness.
Yeah. Actually, I think Robert Downey Jr. has an organization called that because of the fact that he's Iron Man and the thing in the middle of his chest is called the ARC Reactor. I think he actually has an organization called that. I'm pretty sure it's been around for the last couple of years.
Okay. But basically, that's kind of the same principle. You know, acts of random kindness. I wanted it to basically be a tenet of the organization. It's what I call the ARC Covenant. So, me personally, I haven't been able to do much, but I have, you know, the heart and desire to do so. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have the resources to do it just yet.
Yeah. Now, before I get to apeshit, I want to know, being your time in the military, there's always been, or at least from what I've heard in conversations with people, there's always been some sort of controversy over different nonprofit organizations that help the military. There was a story a few years back about the Wounded Warrior Project where they were saying that the money that the Wounded Warrior Project raises, that there isn't enough of it that goes toward helping soldiers, that it stays within the organization itself instead of being dispersed. And I wondered if you had any knowledge of that being true or false.
Well, as a as far as like concrete evidence, I don't have that, but I've heard that several times from people on the, you know, that have been through it, as well as you know, people that have never served. So I don't know if that's based on watching media or from firsthand accounts.
So you don't know any specific, you know, instances where that may or may not be true.
Yeah, no, I might have been able to have a better understanding, had I been, I guess, physically wounded, during my time in war.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, a lot of my issues have always been psychiatric. So, and honestly, it kind of took a while for the military, you know, to recognize that there's a lot of other issues outside of PTSD that soldiers do tend to get more often than the typical population.
Yeah. Just to kind of close this off, the one thing that I remember hearing probably just after I got into high school was that I don't think it was till the 90s that they even classified PTSD as such. Like, they used to call it shell shock before World War II, I think it was. And then I think after World War II, they started calling it PTSD, or maybe it was after Vietnam, I'm not sure.
Yes.
But I know that, I think from what I've heard, once they started considering it PTSD is, I think, when they started taking it more seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, because I recall that too. It's like, I think initially it was like, it's called battle fatigue. And mm-hmm. then the results of a Vietnam War or whatever, shell shock. And then more recently in the recent conflicts, it's been PTSD. But I think the reason why like it started to be taken more seriously is because it was officially recognized as a mental condition.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, it was, I guess, more in the spotlight. It was making more waves.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, transitioning over to, you know, Ape Shit, I want to hear your kind of, we have to backtrack a little, because I want to know from your perspective, with your involvement with me directly with the Footprints Project, what do you remember from that event at 2009? Is there anything that really stands out in your head other than the fact that it was balls hot?
Oh, yeah, it was really hot. But no, I mean, just the passion of the people, the compassion of, you know, just the overall attitude. Very dedicated, and we're all there for the same purpose, to help raise money for at least for child abuse prevention. And and again, that was 10 years ago. I didn't have a whole lot of money, and actually even now I also don't have a lot of money, but I was able to give my time.
Yeah.
And it felt good to be able to be a part of something where the goal was a very worthy cause.
Yeah.
And I that was my takeaway as being a part of it.
I think that was one of the other things, because I actually, being that we were supposed to, you know, record yesterday and, you know, things just, you know, didn't line up, I ended up putting a video up on my main channel, and, you know, talking about the 10-year anniversary of when we did the first event. And I was talking about how I dealt with, when we were organizing the event, I dealt with trying to get people to, you know, join in on the development of the event. But also when I went around to people talking about trying to get donations for, you know, like raffles and silent auctions and all that kind of stuff. The one thing that I think shocked me and really kind of brought me into reality is there was a girl that I went to school with who was working at a local hot dog joint. And Ape Shit, you probably know New Way Lunch. Do you remember New Way Lunch in on South Street?
Yeah, yep.
Well, she was working there, and I went in there for lunch in the midst of, you know, doing or a day of organizing. And I was talking to her about it. And the one statement that she made to me really changed my outlook on people and really where their hearts are. Because, mind you, like I said, the one story that I referenced earlier about the kid that we went to school with, who ended up getting arrested after we were already out of school, and it was literally right in our area. The one thing that she said to me when I was telling her about what we were doing, she looked at me and she goes, "I don't understand why you're pushing such a negative topic in an area where it doesn't happen." And my jaw hit the floor. Like, I did not know what to say to this girl. Like, did she, I mean, you could not go anywhere without seeing a news article about the kid who had just gotten arrested. So for her to sit there and say that I'm pushing a negative topic that doesn't happen in our area, it shocked me. And, you know, that was pretty much the end of it. She just walked away. And it's like, I don't understand that frame of mind of people who are so naive or resistant to something like that. And it's like, why wouldn't you want to get involved to better your community as a whole? And I probably shouldn't have used the word naive, because I know, apeshit, you and I were talking yesterday about how you have felt like you were naive before when it comes to dealing with certain people, but you felt like, you know, you've become less and less naive as, you know, you get older. So I probably shouldn't use the word naive, because I don't want that to seem as a negative thing. But just the fact that she had such a negative reaction to what I was saying really shocked me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it might just be like general ignorance. Like
with this particular girl, I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, but I mean, you know,
I know that's horrible to say, but
I mean, everyone is just so fixated on their own lives, their own, well, I guess, you know, quote, little world. You know, people do pay more attention to their family, their friends, that immediate circle. And if you're brave enough or adventurous enough to venture out into the rest of the world, you know, read the news, keep up on the dealings that happen in the world, you know, people can be very cloistered if they're not paying attention to, I guess, you know, the darkness that happens beyond their walls. So,
I mean, I understand, like, maybe she just kind of stayed away from the news because she didn't really want to acknowledge any of the negative. Because I look back now at 2009, seeing that we're in 2019, where social media has taken control of everybody's life, and we really don't know what to believe, whether it's on the internet or in person. We don't know what's, you know, genuine and what isn't anymore. So I can sort of understand where she was coming from if she was naive to the fact that it was really happening. Because it's not really something, if it doesn't happen close enough to you, it's something that really doesn't affect you. And I think now we're looking down the barrel of something where, whether it happens to you directly or not, everybody's affected by, you know, whatever you hear in person or online. So I think that, you know, at least from my perspective, it's a defense mechanism to really not want to be a part of something like that. But it, I guess at the time, being that social media really hadn't been a thing yet, I think it just shocked me that, you know, there was evidence out there of these things happening in our local area, and she was just completely dismissive of it. And I've never really had a very positive interaction with anybody who is naturally dismissive. It just kind of makes me want to punch people if they're like that. But yeah, it's just, while I understand, based on where we are today, while I understand wanting to, you know, kind of not get involved with too many serious things because of how it affects you, it just shocks me that people are so willing, still so willing to be dismissive.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me about any, you know, the notion of dismissiveness is the lack of the desire to know more. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, instead of questioning anything or wanting to get more information on the topic or whatever, it's just, you know, wave it aside and be done with it. Mm-hmm. That's the slap in the face for me.
Before I move on to the next section. I want to know, you know, do you have any input there, Salty?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Generally, like, I guess people that, I guess, pretend like it's not happening or, you know, or whatever, it seems very, I guess, ignorant. Because, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I get not wanting to really think about it, but, I mean, like, if you want to make the world a better place or anything at all, you know, wouldn't you want to know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it just seems like a waste of potential and energy to just, you know, dismiss it.
I think in general for me, it's just, I think there's such a need to maintain the humanity that is left in the world. It's like, to be that dismissive, and I do believe that there are still people in the world who are that dismissive. I just think that there should be more of an effort to look at it from a humanity standpoint instead of, you know, a personal standpoint. I mean, I know that you have to actively think about how it's going to affect your own, you know, mental and emotional state getting involved in something. But it shocks me how people are still resistant to approaching something from a humanitarian standpoint. They have to wonder, you know, they have to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Pessimistic. Pessimistic.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. It's just, I don't know, like, it just generally seems selfish.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, I get if you are unable, but to just completely pretend like it's not happening. You know, in order for us to maintain or, I guess, better humanity, you know, we have to take on that mantle, you know, as, you know, humans. And, you know, that's not saying necessarily that you have to, you know, doesn't mean you have to necessarily be, you know, a martyr or a masochist or anything like that. But realistically, you know, like, things like this, they should get you fired up. We're, you know, yes, we are a civilized, I guess, with lack of a better word, you know, sentient beings. With that being said, we also have a primal nature. So if one is hurting another, doesn't it like put a fire in your belly that you want to step in between and put a stop to it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And even with somebody like myself, even though, you know, I visibly look like I wouldn't be able to do much, the chair doesn't stop me from, quote unquote, stepping in when needed to a situation that looks like it needs to be de-escalated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, in my mind, you mentioned, you know, our humanity, mm-hmm. is, you know, can be at stake. It seems like we have to recognize the fact that there's a lot of suffering in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like no matter what, like, it's 2019, humans have been around for tens of thousands of years, you know, as like an agricultural civilized quote society. And it's just when you devalue that someone is suffering or struggling, that's almost like a turning away of our own humanity. And I guess that's what gets me, because when you devalue suffering, you're not going to change anything.
Right.
And like, we're not going to become better as a society by ignoring that suffering. And yeah. I guess that's what gets me, because I would love for each and every one of us as a society to become better, but it's going to take all of us ultimately. And it's going to be an uphill battle, I think. So.
Yeah. And Apeshit, I know that there was something I had asked you to do as far as your philosophy background. I asked you to look into what you could find as far as the history of philanthropy, and if there have ever been any philosophers who have made statements about the topic, and I was wondering what you might have found.
Well, I didn't find any philosophers per se, but there are a lot of nuanced aspects to philanthropy. Like when you look at the actions of like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or and others trying to do good things, but then you also see other donors like Rockefeller or in modern history the Sackler family, who owns Pfizer or Purdue Pharma.
Isn't Purdue the ones that are being indicted right now?
Were pushing OxyContin, and they gave quite a bit of money to the Guggenheim Museum in New York City. Mm-hmm. And just this past February, protesters just walked the halls of the Guggenheim and kind of dumped paper slips with like kind of fake prescriptions of OxyContin in the face of the Guggenheim, which is ultimately really sad.
Yeah.
Because you have this family making money through dishonest dealings of, abusing kind of the medical community and patients and that sort of thing. People actually in pain. And you're just driving up prices. You're selling this addictive medicine to them. And then you're giving your, quote, earnings to the Guggenheim to get your name on a hall.
Yeah.
And that's an aspect of, I guess, the dark side of philanthropy. People who get their money dishonestly and want to put their names on things that will last forever.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Mm-hmm. Philanthropy has always been about providing a service. You know how you learn in school the difference between goods and services? Philanthropy for me always has seemed to be very service driven.
Yep.
So that's why I think the most genuine of people, they go into philanthropy not wanting anything in return. Whether it be, something physical and tangible, or, a service in return. because I don't think that that in and of itself is philanthropy, because I think philanthropy has to be given of oneself without the expectation of something in return.
You know, and honestly, it depends on the person, because I mean, technically, the poorest of the poor can be philanthropic with their time, say.
Yeah.
Because if that's all they have, and if they want to give to something, you know, they give their time, their effort, that energy to a cause. Whereas if you have others with billions of dollars, they're able to afford to give, you know, millions to museums or theaters or even, almost any realm of academics or media or, you know, magazines, that sort of thing. It is a huge world out there for philanthropy on any scale. And the end effect of it kind of depends on the nature of the individual giving. And so you can have the saintliest of saints giving their time and money to good causes, or you can have the most underhanded, devilish gangsters giving money to, you know, the already wealthy and powerful who can influence other things.
Yeah.
So it can be very light or very dark, depending on who's giving.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting.
As far as you bringing up the idea of, you know, the type of person who does a philanthropic act, I might be wrong, and people who see this video in the comments below, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard stories throughout the years that although from a law abiding standpoint, I know that Al Capone was very, very much considered a bad person. But I also have heard that within his community, he was very giving to his community. And it makes me wonder. I mean, I know that one does not absolve the other. So, you know, you do one thing, it still doesn't absolve you of the bad that you've done. Like, that bad that you've done doesn't go away. It's still there. But I wonder if, you know, I wonder if it's okay to look at somebody who a majority of people think that is a bad person and look at them in a positive light because they did something good for you, or you saw them do something good.
Well, you do have to look at the broader picture. So hypothetically, if I make $100 and I give, I don't know, 25 cents to a little kid who needs it, I mean, it's, you know, tokenistic logic. If you go around murdering people, but like, oh, let's build a community garden. according to Ava Braun, Hitler was a nice guy.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I think it stands true that we're all nice to the people that we care about.
Yeah, and if
I think that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, if you want to be a truly good person, you have to be good to everybody, because you do have to look at the broader social context of almost anyone's actions. What's the ultimate good they're doing, the ultimate bad they're doing? You really can't tokenize the good aspects or the bad aspects. If someone is a saint, but they do one bad thing during their college years, say, or you know, something like that, and then they're vilified for the rest of their life,
yeah.
Or someone gets a statue because, oh, well, in the end, they sacrificed themselves for some reason, even though they were a murderous, traitorous wretch or something.
Yeah.
You do have to look at the full life, from birth to death, the full picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like really in the grand scheme of things, obviously there is both good and evil. And, at the, somewhere in the middle is where humans reside, because it's not so simple to say we're either good or evil, all the time. So, I mean, we're more complicated than that, but at the same time, from a, from the philanthropy side of things, I think the ideology of trying to make a positive impact can be done by pretty much anybody.
Yeah, and actually, anyone is able to give something. And again, whether it's money or time or energy, no one is helpless. And I think that's something we need to remember. It's just that there are people out there with money who give a lot to put their name on something, but that shouldn't mean that, you know, they're gods among men when there are people every day doing good things, little, you know, bit by bit. And I think that's what we need to be grateful for, the little heroes, so to speak.
Yeah.
Apeshit, as far as where you and I met in 2007, I think it was 2007, or maybe, I don't know, it was in the early 2000s when we were both working at the same theme park.
Yeah.
I don't know if Six Flags had already taken over ownership, but the guy who originally started that theme park was probably one of the most philanthropic people in my area, like in, you know, probably my area and the surrounding towns. Mm-hmm. And he was wealthy. He literally started the theme park, had like several other like for-profit businesses in the same area, but he always gave a lot of his wealth to charitable causes. And the one thing that, you know, obviously will always stick out with me is that he was part of the reason that the camp that I went to as a kid, he's part of the reason that that camp exists, because he reached out to Paul Newman and he said, you know, I believe one of your camps needs to be, you know, up in this area, because I really believe that there are a wealth of kids in this area that would benefit from it. So the reason that that camp exists is in part because of him. And like that, I think, is really what started to build my, you know, fascination and my appreciation for philanthropy. Because it was something, and I hate to say it like this, but I think you guys will understand what I mean. Because it was something that benefited me, it's like I understood, I wanted to know where it came from. And knowing where it came from, I think, made me appreciate the place that it came from even more so than the fact that it existed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sign of maturity.
Yeah.
Like, and gratitude, honestly.
And that's actually you know, and I've said it on my personal channel a lot. The fact that I went to that camp is the reason that I want to start my own camp here in Virginia. He and Paul Newman, his name was Charlie Wood. He and Paul Newman are the reason that I decided, instead of just being, you know, the person that was thrown into, you know, a fundraiser because of, you know, having, you know, spina bifida, instead of just being that person that was the face of a fundraiser or the face of a cause, I wanted to actually be a philanthropist, because I don't like being monetarily wealthy doesn't mean a thing to me. But as a lot of my videos on my personal channel will say, my goal is to just connect with people and, you know, create a more lasting and impactful conversation. And that is what, you know, humanity is to me. And I think I think humanity starts with philanthropy. You really start to get a grasp of what humanity is when you start, you know, being around people who are philanthropic for the right reasons.
Mm. And yeah, that is a really good example of, I guess, good philanthropy. To those who much is given, you know, much is expected. And if the wealthy do give back to the society in a good way, then yeah, that's, I guess, probably their responsibility, but it's also, it's very appreciated.
Yeah.
Especially among poorer communities that don't have, I don't know, you know, good schools or museums or parks or, you know, that sort of thing. When you can give back to people, especially if they need it, it is very much appreciated, especially if they're not getting enough taxes or money circulating any other way. So it can be a big boon to any community if the wealthy gave back.
Yeah.
So and that's a really good example. So
before I touch on my next two things, I want Salty, do you have anything to add?
Not really. I think the for this particular stanza in our conversation, you guys kind of hit the nail on the head. Yeah, I mean, that's all I got. So I mean,
two of the things that also stick out to me, as far as philanthropy, and again, it's something that directly impacted me. I think I was probably 11 or 12, and the guy that my mom was seeing at the time had been in contact with this family in Connecticut, I think. Apeshit, if you're near a computer, you can look this up. Just to, you know, make sure that I'm getting my details right. There was a playground that we had heard about. I think it was in Connecticut. It's called Jonathan's Dream. And it's a playground where anybody can, you know, play on the playground, but it is specifically designed so that people with medical special needs can participate in being on the playground equipment. And we went to this playground, and I'm looking around, I'm looking at this playground, and I'm in awe. Like, I have never seen anything like it. And within, I think, 2 years, we ended up having the same style of playground where I, in my hometown, it was called Freedom Park, and I believe it's still there.
Awesome. Yeah, I just looked it up. Jonathan's Dream, look, looks like it's located in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay, so I was right. Thank God. I'm usually geographically stunted, so go ahead.
Oh no. I'm sorry. I gotta step away for a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I know I keep doing this to you guys, but I gotta take care of other things.
No, just do me a favor and just mute your mic.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
No problem. I'll be right back.
Uh-huh. And you know, like I said, it's weird for me to talk about these things that have impacted me because I don't want it to sound like I'm being self-absorbed or self-centered or what have you, but I'm merely just drawing from my experiences, both, you know, being involved in philanthropy and benefiting from philanthropy. So I don't want it to sound like I'm, you know, bragging or boasting or any of that when it comes to something that I have, you know, come across that has had direct effect on me. But, you know, I think probably 2 or 3 years ago, I actually got back in touch with the family who started Jonathan's Dream. I didn't stay in contact with them for long because it was difficult via social media. But it just, I look at that and it gives me hope that there is, you know, still a healthy level of humanity out there. But one of the things that, and I don't know how often you watch the news, but did you hear anything a couple of months ago regarding that couple who was found to have orchestrated a scam via GoFundMe? The story was that they had found their car had broken down, and they found a homeless guy that was walking by, and he gave them his last $20 so that they could put gas in their car and get home. And I guess they set up a GoFundMe to, you know, help him out and take care of him financially and thank him for helping them out. But there were too many holes in the story, and it eventually came out that all three of them were in on the scam, and they ended up robbing people through donations. They robbed people of hundreds of thousands of dollars through GoFundMe. So it's like, I have to wonder back to when I mentioned earlier about the girl who was skeptical about what I was doing when I started the first child abuse awareness event. I have to wonder if she's not wrong in doubting that things are on the up and up, because that right there, that puts a really black mark essentially on philanthropy, and it makes people not trust the genuine acts of philanthropy that, in my opinion, need to happen.
Yeah, well, honestly, yes, I have heard of that story, and it was sickening.
Yeah,
to say the least. But yeah, the act of giving itself is not bad, and I feel like it's the meat between two different types of bread. You know, anything that comes before it is intentionality, causes, your reason for giving. And then at the end, what it's actually used for, like the end outcome. And there are so many variabilities. again, a lot of nuance. And that the example you just gave is just one of many. Actually, going back to the Wounded Warrior Project, there are articles. You guys were correct. In 2016, the Wounded Warrior Project CEOs, Stephen Nardizzi and the Al Giordano were fired after they had been revealed as spending massive amounts of the company's money on lavish things for themselves and company retreats.
Okay, I'm glad I wasn't wrong with that, because I knew I had heard something about them, but I wasn't sure, you know, the specifics of it.
Yeah, same here. And I was trying to find, like, actual articles, but then a lot of them I found I needed to either, like, subscribe or that sort of thing, and I'm like, fuck. So I can only read, like, half of a quarter of a paragraph.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, not a whole lot of information there. But yeah, the gist of it is correct. And again, those are just two examples, but there are others throughout history where your money isn't going toward what you were told it was going toward.
Yeah.
And that can give people a sense of pause before they even think about giving, because, well, wait a minute, should I trust you? Is this a legitimate charity? Or what do people do? So when people take advantage of people's trust and generosity, that is awful, because when they learn the truth, they're not going to trust anyone else after that.
Yeah.
So everyone becomes cautious and guarded and distrustful. So you really have to do your research now and, you know, donate to almost like, you know, a tried and true charity. But again, there are a lot of new up and coming charities that are also worth it, but no one wants to trust them because, well, I got burned before, so I don't want that to happen again. So it's a wild world.
From a moral and ethical standpoint, based on, you know, your level of education, do you think that there will ever come a time where humanity is too far gone and people are so untrusting of each other that philanthropy itself is not trusted? Do you think we're going in that direction, or could we head in that direction?
Honestly, I think we are headed in that direction currently, but it can change. Let's see, an article I found, Okay, so this guy wrote a book called The Givers, Wealth, Power, and Philanthropy in a New Gilded Age by, David Callahan. And he actually brings up both the good aspects and the bad aspects of philanthropy and the rundown of it. So currently, when I'm talking about philanthropists here, these are the super rich, like the top 400 billionaires giving millions to whatever cause. One of the criticisms is that philanthropists can influence public policy. So when people talk about the influence of money in politics, they often mean campaign donations. But wealthy philanthropists can influence policy in many other ways. Author David Callahan says they can do this by setting up a foundation to fund these things. Think tanks, academics who publish and research. Oh, okay, wait. Okay, yeah, it's a bulleted list. Hold on. So there's think tanks, academics who publish research to support given opinion, lawyers to pursue change through litigation, activists to stage protests and pressure campaigns, pop-up media blitzes, creation of media outlets, underwriting of books and magazines, documentaries to persuade public opinion. And again, that can go both good or bad. You can have good or bad think tanks, good or bad academics pushing a certain opinion, etc. But that does happen among these billionaires giving millions of dollars, where the rest of us in America are kind of, you know, the working poor feel disenfranchised. And here's a quote right here. More and more public policy debates looks like Greek gods throwing lightning bolts at each other, billionaires on the left and the right, as the rest of us watch from the sidelines.
Yeah.
So
although I've never seen this movie, the example that I would use is War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Two warring factions, and then the rest of us who really aren't involved, they're just sitting there looking and going, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
It's like a ping pong match. You're looking, you know, as the ball goes from one side of the table, and you're like, okay, who's going to screw up first?
Yeah, but one has a bazooka, the other has a ping pong paddle. So,
yeah.
And it's really scary that so few people can have so much influence over millions of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very scary when philanthropy goes to the dark side.
Yeah.
But then you also have philanthropy going on the light side that are, you know, donations to schools and parks and museums, you know, pushing further education and technology and science and art and writing, engineering, everything like that. And honestly, like, I listen to NPR, and every 3 months they do their fun drive. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, come on, that's not fun. That's a joke.
One of the things, you bring up a good point that actually just reminded me of something that is currently going on with the whole college admission scandal.
Yeah.
With them paying somebody to cheat their kids' way into the college, after that had all, you know, that story had broke, I think you're familiar with Dr. Dre, the rapper, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He put a thing on Instagram, and he said, getting my daughter maybe into college the right way. And he quickly had to take that post down off Instagram because people had pointed out, people on the internet do their research, or at least when it benefits them, they do their research. they did their research and they called him out on it. They said, you're not getting your daughter into college the right way. You just donated several million dollars to get your name on something so that, you know, she could get in there for free, essentially. And I don't think philanthropy should be used as a stepping stone to get into an educational or an academic institution.
Yeah. And again, that's just one example of how money talks.
Remember when we were growing up, do you remember I don't know if your parents necessarily use this because I don't know them, but I know that my mom and my grandmother frequently said money talks and bullshit walks.
Yeah. Yep.
Your parents were probably a little bit more PG than mine. But yeah, that's what I grew up hearing is money talks and bullshit walks.
Oh, God. And I hate to say it. It's so true. But yeah. And it's very discouraging to people who follow the rules, who are honest, who actually have to work to get to where they are. And more we're told every day the payoff isn't worth it. And
now I will say, like, with me, the local, the community college that I just went to 2 years ago, that is designated as a nonprofit institution, which I think is great. I know that most of the community colleges are nonprofit. It makes me wonder why the private institutions like Harvard, Yale, why they have to be for profit. And I mean, that goes into the whole, you know, if education and healthcare were all nonprofit, we would not see as much issue as we do today. Because while I do agree that for what they give, teachers are not paid enough, I will say that. But as far as the medical community goes, I think that if somebody mandated, and I've said this for years, even because I've been on the inside of the medical community since birth because of having spina bifida. Mm. But I think as far as the medical profession goes, if the medical profession was nonprofit, you wouldn't have these medical institutions and these drug companies making money hand over fist every 30 seconds. Yeah. And I think that monetarily benefiting off of somebody's health or lack of health is the definition of unethical and immoral.
Yeah, because people have to pay it or they die.
Yeah.
Those are your options. And yeah, it's as a society, each and every one of us has a moral obligation, a social responsibility toward each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what defines a society. And it's this overt money-making scheme that gets me in the education, the medical realms, where those are the almost like the epitome of how you better a society. You keep people educated. You keep people healthy. And that is going to build a better society. But if we're changing the system so that it's manipulated, that you teach what we want you to learn, yeah, or you stay only as healthy as you can so that we can still make money,
right,
that is socially I don't know. It's appalling to me.
Yeah, like I said, it's unethical and immoral.
Yeah.
Going back to, just because we're in the realm of medical topic, going back to the guy that I said was partially responsible for setting up the camp that I went to, he actually donated money to the local hospital in my hometown. And forgive me, I'm not actually saying the towns just because I don't want, you know, too many people knowing too much information about me, but I think you know what I'm talking about because you were in that area. But the local hospital where I grew up, he donated money and built, an entire cancer wing, like a cancer treatment center in this hospital. But the one thing that bothers me is there were just reports that said that this hospital, the hospital as a whole, is financially struggling. And it came out that they were hosting these lavish dinners and events for donors. And instead of, you know, just leaving it at hosting these dinners, they were creating products that they were putting the name of the hospital on to give to these donors. It's like, why are you wasting money on products that aren't helping the hospital, but you're asking people for money for the hospital? You're only going to break even. You're not going to be able to support this hospital with the practices that you're currently engaging in. And what bothers me is the amount of money that this man put into developing specifically a cancer center because he himself had gone through cancer. He gave money to the hospital to specifically develop a cancer center. And if they keep going with the way they're going and partaking in the practices that they're doing, like, this entire hospital is going to cease to exist. Like, they've already had to offshoot some of their services to hospitals in other towns. And that's not something you want to do.
No. And that is so sad. Well, for one thing, the gentleman who provided that money for the cancer wing, that can't count against him. That was an awesome move.
Right. No. But it also makes me, the reason I brought that up is because it makes me question the morality of the people you're giving to, because once you give them that money, you're doing it for a noble cause. But what they do with it after you give that to them, it may not be so noble, but then you're thrown into the mix of, you know, being a part of that, you know, that salacious story where, you know, the entity that you provided money to, you know, they're not using the money like they should be. And now, because you're the one that gave them that money, your name is thrown into that, you know, to that fighting ring, and yeah. It doesn't belong there.
Guilt by association.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, you know, you have the donation itself, which is the meat of philanthropy. And then on either side, you have
the potatoes.
Your bread, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, you have, you know, well-intentioned giving. So you have your donation, and then you have people at the end who use it unwisely.
Yeah.
So not everyone is noble, sadly.
Like the story that you and I were talking about with the couple that set up that GoFundMe.
Yeah.
And they scammed a bunch of people out of their money. Like, you know, the people that were giving money were giving to what they thought was a noble cause. But those people had very, you know, immoral and unethical reasons for wanting that money.
Yeah.
That's what the hell? That is trashy. Like, why
do
that? You
know what we're talking about?
No, but like what I just heard, whatever, that sullies the whole concept of philanthropy, because people are taking advantage of the system, and that's fucked up.
I'm not sure how much you partake in reading the news, but do you remember a story a couple months ago about a couple who said that they were stranded on the side of the road and a homeless man came up and gave them his last $20 so they could put gas in their car, and they wanted to help. They said they wanted to help him out. So they organized a GoFundMe, and there were a lot of really fishy things as to the way they were managing it. But it came out that all three of them were actually in on the scam, and they were scamming people out of their money through GoFundMe. And they're all now facing several decades in prison.
We're good.
Yeah. But it's just like, it, you know, Ape Shit and I were talking, and, you know, I can understand, going back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the conversation, with that girl who was questioning what I was doing with the child abuse awareness stuff, I can understand people's skepticism, because whether you have, you know, somebody that's trying to do good and provide for other people, you're always going to have those bad actors. And the one thing that we discussed while you were away was whether or not we thought that bad actors are going to become so common that philanthropy is no longer trusted.
Well, I mean, for the sake of, you know, the future, I hope that doesn't come to light. Because that's counterproductive in more than one facet. Mm-hmm. It's really ridiculous that people are doing that. But, you know, like Ethan was saying, you know, unfortunately not everybody is noble. Which honestly is kind of sad.
And it just, I don't know, like I hate not being able to know whether I can trust somebody. And that's really what it's coming down to. Like, there are people that I've known for most of my life that I'm starting to realize, you know, I'm starting to question, can I still trust them? Could I ever trust them? You know, I'm starting to rethink so many things just because of their actions. And it's like, were their actions ever pure and noble, or were they, you know, inevitably, you know, at the end of the day, self-serving?
Yeah, it makes you think back on it and be like, what was anything that they did throughout the time you knew them that was genuine?
Yeah.
And it's terrible that people do that. I personally don't get it. The way I was raised, I was pretty much raised to be noble. So when somebody isn't, it doesn't make sense to me. So like, yeah. It's like, are you really that bad off that the only way for you to move up is to tear other people down?
Yeah.